From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for September 18th, 2020. The Packers have their home opener Sunday with the Detroit Lions, and the Brewers are at Miller Park with the Kansas City Royals for the last homestand of the season. Let's start with a few animal stories. The St. Louis Zoo says a python laid 7 eggs without any male help. If you want to know the last time that happened, you'll need a Bible. We have some good news and bad news from Knoxville, Tennessee. First, the bad news. There's a tiger on the loose in Knoxville. And the good news, there are now fewer coyotes in Knoxville. Also in Tennessee, a 150-pound tortoise who escaped from a Tennessee home has been returned. It was on the loose for 74 days and managed to make it less than a mile during a slow and steady jailbreak. And of course, we have a Florida story. The Florida State Patrol received a 911 call about a large alligator hiding in a storage shed. Cops and gator wranglers were dispatched to save the day, only to find a large alligator pool floaty. And finally, someone has some explaining to do. In Queensland, Australia, because of COVID-19, dancing at weddings is banned, but group sex parties are okay. Hopefully not at the wedding. At the podcast today, we have Kurt Rothschild, Steve Giles, Joel Dreesing, Kyle Tedding, and back from a well-deserved vacation. To wrap up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. NASDAQ lost 0.6% this week, shedding 60 points to close at 10,793, still leading the charge in the markets. Total return 21.1%. Thank you, tech stocks. The broader markets, S&P Stock Composite 500, lost 0.7% this week, losing 22 points. Closed at 33.19. Dow Jones Industrial Average, statistically flat for the week, gave up just 9 points. Close of the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 27,657. Good idea to follow the S&P to get a sense of where the markets are going these days as the Dow continues to head in a separate direction, doesn't have as many tech stocks. The S&P up 4.1%, including dividends for the year. The Dow is down still 1.4%. You know, when you look at the news this week, get a sense that growth is slowing some. You know, we saw that earlier in the summer, but the recovery in manufacturing is slowing. Joel, we'll get to you in a bit, talk about industrial production rose in August, but at a lower rate. Recovery in the labor market is also losing momentum as first-time claims for unemployment stay elevated. To top it all off, Jay Powell, chairman of the Fed, Wednesday said, economic outlook is highly uncertain. But, you know, what I'd like to talk about to start the program is how many people I talk to are convinced that the market's too high and it's heading for a fall. And typically people that I talk to reference the election, that if that other person gets in, the market's going to get clobbered. People talk to me about lofty valuations. You know, the easy part on market timing, if you ever succumb to that disease, is getting out. It's easy. You just press a couple of keystrokes, your advisor will, and you're out of the market or you've reduced your exposure. The hard part, of course, is getting back in. Most people don't feel comfortable getting back in until the clouds have parted, the sky is clear, the sun is out, and the market's probably going to be pretty high because of that. And you pay a dear price to time the market. Got asked by some folks at a law firm downtown in March, hey, Bob, what's wrong with the idea of let's just get out of everything? We'll buy in later when prices are lower and save ourselves some money, make some money. What's wrong with that idea? Well, you just realized what's wrong with it. stock market has gone basically straight up for the last 6 months. So, you know, one of the lessons here, folks, is, you know, many of you have been telling me that you're positive. Many of you, you've been telling me that everybody you know is positive. I've been managing money professionally for 46 years. I've never been positive about a thing. There's always uncertainties that present themselves. And even the temptation to lighten up a little bit is still a market call, and it's still wrong. Kyle, let me start with you with one of the problems that I've seen in so many recessions with the stock market. A little bit of background, folks. We typically talk about price earnings ratios, the way to judge the value of a stock. And there's two ways to look at it. You can look at the last 12 months, tells you where you've been. Most of us that do this for a living and are more interested in looking at the forward earnings for the market. And here's the problem. They arbitrarily chop it off at 12 months. So when you're looking at forward PEs, you know, right now they tell you the market is kind of expensive. I think it's the wrong indicator to look at. I think it's the wrong way to value the market in a recession. You know, just look at what Joel, you disseminated to us earlier today. You know, earnings are supposed to go up 23% next year. So that's a big number, but you're not going to capture all of that in a 12-month forward valuation. You know, I think the market is at some point going to get ready for the receipt of a vaccine. So those folks that think they can time the market, you better get back into the market before they announce the arrival of a vaccine, because that is a game changer for stocks, not only here in the United States, but overseas as well. Kyle, let's start off with valuations here. You know, I've for years expressed frustrations with you about how inaccurate forward PEs are when you're coming out of recession, because it just chops off valuations, earnings rather, just in 12 short months.
You know, Bob, I think it's such a great place to start. You look at the forward price to earnings ratio right now, sitting at about 22.5 for the S&P 500. But as it stands, we're adding back about $1 a week in earnings right now on that forward earnings number. And so pretty quickly by the end of the year, we're back to, you know, forward 12-month forecast of about $165 on the S&P 500. That puts you where the S&P is right now at a forward multiple a little below 20. And so to go from 22.5 and just roll one more quarter ahead for where the market is right now, you know, maybe we finish the year roughly where we are. And I think that's a big assumption, because there's a lot that still can happen to the plus or to the minus. But, you know, finish the year where we are roughly right now, and earnings come in even reasonably where we think they're going to be. And you're talking about an earnings multiple that's 13, 14% lower than where we are right now. And, you know, I think even then you look at just the next year and say, maybe that's not even the right number, because we're in an environment right now where it feels like the world is standing still, where it feels like things aren't moving forward. And yet, you know, we've got big news in the coming months on Apple announcing a 5G iPhone. You've got Tesla having a battery day next week, talking about all these great developments in their technology. And so innovation is still happening all around us. And I think that's one of the reasons why you buy stocks, right? Is that you want to buy the earnings of these companies, not just next year or the year after, but you want to buy these great innovations that are still happening, because 4, 5, 10 years down the road, it's going to be worth a lot of money. And so, and I think it's one thing to say, yeah, stocks are a little expensive right now, especially relative to the next 12 months. You start to bake in all of the things that we can do, especially here in the U.S. with the capital, you know, the capitalism system that we have, and how much innovation has been at the heart of that. And I think, you know, I'm a little more optimistic about, you know, where earnings are headed from here, a little more optimistic about what forward valuations look like if you look beyond just the next 12 months.
You know, the other major issue, of course, that generates enormous amount of questions is the election coming up. And without trying to dodge the issue, it's just so important that people remember that stocks trade based on earnings and interest rates. And the politicians really can't control either one, except for barely on the margins. They can cajole the Fed, they can scream at the Fed chair, they can disagree with Fed policy, but they don't get to set policy. That's up to the Federal Reserve. On earnings, you know, most people spend their money based on what they need, what they want, and it's typically without regard to who's in the White House. So you add all that up, and in aggregate, politicians really can't control earnings or interest rates to any measurable extent. Moreover, it's important to remember that the stock market is not the same as the economy. You know, here in the United States, we've got five stocks, just five of them. They're 24% of the value of the S&P. That's what's driving the markets now, is the impressive earnings growth of those five names. And the point is, the politicians can't really interfere with that in any meaningful way. You know, Kyle, you talk to a lot of portfolio managers, and in all the years that I've been at it, you know, the outcome of the election doesn't even make the top 10 of questions that that many people ask of the managers.
Yeah, you know, Bob, they'd rather talk about the Fed. They'd rather talk about, you know, the things I talked about earlier about innovation, right? It's they're looking for businesses that have something that people want, and preferably something that people want regardless of who's in office, because that's most businesses. You know, as you say, you don't do your spending based on who the president is or who's in Congress. You do your spending based on what you need, what you want, you know, what you can afford. And so, you know, I think you talk about earnings and interest rates, and the other piece of this is, of course, is interest rates. And we had the Fed announcement this week on kind of the direction of policy going forward. And we continue to see support, not just on, you know, the future of the earnings side, but we see support on the interest rate side. And so, you know, when I talk to fund managers, that's the stuff they want to point out, is this really is about earnings and interest rates. It really is about the fundamentals of business, not economic policy. Yeah, those things matter, you know, and especially they matter on the margins. But if you're a great business, you're going to find ways to make money. If you're a great business, you're going to have things that people want. And so, you know, when we talk to managers, that's what they're looking for. It's not, you know, okay, well, we're going to be a little more conservative now because we think this is the political outcome. It's, yeah, we could care less. I mean, yeah, maybe we have a preference and it does matter, but ultimately, you know, we're looking for 30, 40, 50 stocks that we think are going to be great businesses long-term. And that's more than one, you know, voting cycle as well. And I think that's the piece that we also fail to discuss so often, you know, as investors broadly, is, you know, we're not investing for the next 4 years. We're investing for 8 years, for 10 years beyond. And that's not one presidential cycle. That's two, three, four. You know, you're investing for your lifetime. And so, yes, it matters short term. But again, longer term, I think there's a far bigger picture that we need to be concerned about.
Steve, let me bring you into the program. You joined our firm over 20 years ago at a point when value stocks were extremely out of favor. And you learned pretty quick that that can change. So fast forward this more than 20 years to the present, and here we are in a similar environment where value stocks are extremely out of favor. You know, my sense of the markets here are that when a vaccine ultimately arrives, hopefully it will, when it does arrive, that it'll give the economy a pretty good shot. And historically, the cyclical stocks, many of which reside in the value camp, tend to outperform. And the thought simply is that we're going to get growth as a given. Why overpay for growth stocks when you can get growth just out of the classic cyclical plays? So it seems to me, Steve, that time is going to come at some point when value starts to outperform growth. You want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think the point I always make with clients when they bring up how well growth is doing currently compared to value is this idea called regression to the mean. And yes, we have seen growth perform admirably over the last 10 years. In fact, it's the first time we've seen in decades where 10-year, 15-year, and 20-year numbers for growth are beginning to outperform the value side of the equation. Why is regression to the mean important here? Well, the only way you get averaged is to obviously go through periods of above average performance and below average performance, and the average of those is the average. So here we're living through a period where value has been underperforming relative to growth. The only way for them to get back to average is might be some outperformance moving forward. Again, on the flip side, growth has been outperforming. The only way to get back to an average performance for them longer term will be a regression back to maybe some years of underperformance.
You know, Steve, you wonder if we're now seeing that with a lot of the tech stocks taking a pretty good hit here the last several weeks, we may be in the middle of that rotation. It's important everybody remember that leadership can't last forever, never does, never will. So don't give up the hope on the value stocks. They're starting to come back. You know, earlier in the summer, a lot of the value funds were down 10, 11% or more for the year. And now most of those are heading towards slightly positive territory, or they're just down a couple of percent or so.
And I think the fund managers recognize that these growth stocks may be a bit overpriced. Their job is to find value. Their job is to find attractive valuations with the stocks they're investing in. And value right now is perhaps perceived as a little bit better bargain longer term, hence the outperformance of value in the near term.
Yeah, Steve, if I could add, you know, historically growth stocks have been more volatile than value stocks, and that's changed a little bit especially the past few years. The volatility we saw in growth stocks was largely just them moving higher, but we'll reach an environment in which kind of the expectations for growth become volatile again, and you'd expect that return or that performance or your expectations for return become a little more volatile. And that's a place where value tends to shine as well, is it tends to be a little more plodding. It tends to be a little more, intentional in its path forward. And so, nothing's for nothing when you're an investor. You do have to take risk to get return, but you got to do it the right way. And I think we will see a little bit of volatility come back into growth stocks as we move forward.
Art, let's bring you into the show. You got a really good question from a client in Arizona the other day about the return on bonds, the yield on bonds moving forward. A gentleman asked me, Bob, am I right to assume that the returns that I'll experience on bonds in the next couple of years will be lower than the historical average and perhaps lower than I have enjoyed this year? And I talked to him about how, and this dovetails into what we were just talking about with value stocks, that, you know, at some point in time when a lot of corporate bonds are down in the 1-1.5% range, it's going to force a lot of money into the dividend plays, where there are all sorts of safe dividends that pay more, not only than U.S. Treasuries right now, that's not hurt, but the more profitable corporate bond. So I think that could be just what value stocks need, as people get tired of puny returns on corporates moving forward now that the plunge in rates is over and now that the Fed is telling us that they don't intend to raise rates for 3 years. That's an eternity for what we do for a living. My sense of the street is that that'll create some buying in dividend plays. Art, what are you telling clients about the bond market these days?
Yeah, we love bonds. We always love bonds. And this is all interrelated, the things we've been talking about. The future is always uncertain. And quite frankly, we never know what's going to happen at any point in time in the present. So we always use bonds as sort of that anchor to windward that keeps us on a steady path going forward. So even though interest rates are low, because the Fed has told us they're going to keep them low for a considerable period of time, I'm telling my clients that we're still buying bonds, we're still holding bonds for the safety and the stability that they provide. And I don't think that's ever going to change. But as you indicated, that also does suggest that if you really want to make money and get paid a reasonable income stream, then you can buy conservative dividend paying value stocks. But typically, we're always going to want the stock portion of the portfolio to be used for long-term growth. Given the uncertainties that are currently out there with respect to the present and when the pandemic's going to end, what's going to happen in the election, and at least people are concerned about that. Going forward, we can expect that the economy will get back to normal. We can expect that stocks are going to do better than bonds. But we know that if things don't work out, bonds are always going to be safer and more stable. And this week's another good example. I believe the yield on the 10-year Treasury went down this week because people are buying bonds for safety and stability. And they're buying corporates because they can't get paid enough on treasuries to make them worth, holding for higher income. So, you know, I love bonds. I'm telling clients they should appreciate the fact that they have those bonds because they're making good money now in a pandemic, and they didn't lose too much on their bonds when things went down in the worst of times back in March. And so, and going forward, Bob, as you've taught me for decades, you always want to have something for safety in your portfolio, and bonds really do fit that bill, I think, perfectly.
With the broader market, it's up 4 or 5%, give or take, for the year. Most folks listening to this program have made more on their bond portfolio this year than their stock portfolio. So if you need any kind of reason to have that anchor to windward, if you will, a bond portion in your account, there's the reason. Hey, Joel, last but not least, as they say, we had a plethora of economic reports come out. Let's start with industrial production, up 4 months in a row. Slowing down a little bit, though.
That's right. Yeah, that's kind of the theme of the numbers we've been seeing lately. So industrial production, all the output from factories and mining operations and utilities, as you said, up 4 months in a row. But it was in August, it was the slimmest of gains in those 4 months. And industrial output is still 7.3% below where it was before the pandemic back in February. The other number that comes out with that is also from the Fed. That looks at capacity utilization rate, which tells you how much all of those industrial companies are using of their factories and their mines and their power plants. And that also is kept rising, but it's still a shadow of what it was. So in August, it was the fifth straight month that it expanded. It was to 71.4% of capacity, but that's up from an all-time low of 64% in April. So that's progress. But it's still down from 76.9% in February, and that's still way below the all-time average, which is closer to 80%, and we haven't been near that capacity rate since 2008. So it's been a long time, and that's usually a precursor of one of the precursors of inflation. So it's telling you that inflation's not right around the corner.
Retail sales, they grew. That was encouraging.
Yeah, that was actually a fun number to see. Retail, we know that more than 2/3 of the economy is driven by consumer spending. So retail sales, is a good measure of that. I think it measures about 25% of what the consumers are spending. And that actually has been above the last recession peak, which came in February. It's been the last 3 months we've had record amount of retail spending each of the last 3 months. But again, the latest month in August, it was the narrowest that we've seen so far. And then within that, it gets a little interesting. Kyle last week was talking about how a lot of people are sort of shifting how they're spending money during the pandemic. An illustration that I'm going to put up along with the podcast shows how retail spending at bars and restaurants is actually still 17%, more than almost $11 billion below where it was in February. But online spending you know, we're buying everything on the internet now. That's gone up, and it's been up, you know, ever since the pandemic hit.
Kyle, let me bring you back here just for a minute. Final thoughts?
You know, I think we are operating in an environment right now in which the questions seem to be, what are my returns going to be over the next 6 months, the next year, given all the uncertainty, given that valuations are a little bit high, given that bond yields are as low as they are? And I think maybe we're asking the wrong question. You know, I think we are so focused on what's going on in the world today, because we have to be, because it's so critical to our survival, that I think as investors, maybe we're missing the broader picture. And that is that our survival as investors isn't dependent upon solely what happens in the next 6 months or a year. It's dependent upon how we face what's coming over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Even for older investors, often their time horizon is, you know, a retirement. It's, you know, from the time you retire at 60, 65, 70 until, you know, you no longer need that money for whatever reason that is. And so, you know, I think, again, I am very aware of the world we live in right now and how much uncertainty that causes. And at the same time, I think, you know, it's incumbent upon us as advisors, it's incumbent upon us as, you know, investment professionals to, you know, maybe refocus some of that energy towards how do we make the right decisions for the next 5 to 10 years.
Steve, final thoughts?
Bob, I continue to remind clients to stay balanced, especially during times like this of heightened volatility. We've touched on bond exposure today. We've touched on value and growth today. And I think it is very important for investors to remember that it's not market timing, but your time in the market, and having the balance to get through whatever the markets throw at you longer term is going to make you look smart no matter what.
Thank you for that. Arthur?
Be humble. What we were talking about earlier, never think you know what's really going to happen next. Always be ready for anything that might happen, and lengthen your horizons, as Kyle suggested. Always, you know, look forward and make sure you have your portfolio well enough balanced and diversified to get you through any turbulence that might occur in the short run.
Thank you for that. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.